I had a real good barbecue sandwich on the way back from LA.
What kind of barbecue are we talking?
Like a sliced tri-tip with a little bit of a kind of sweet and tangy, but just a little tiny kick of a sauce there on a toasted, on it. They did a long, like soft sourdough roll that was toasted.
Okay.
With some butter on it. It looked like on the grill, maybe.
That sounds pretty good. Can you identify the three tips?
Well, there's three of them.
Right. Yes.
Yeah.
That's right there in the name.
There's one, two, and three.
Yes.
Do you know which one you cut from?
I don't.
You cut against the grain. So you cut down the long, one of the two long sides. But I always have to do two cuts to figure it out because I never, it's like the USB-A port. I never get it right on the first try.
Oh, wait, hang on. So tri-tip is basically just another word for triangle. It's like a polygonal beef is what we're saying. It's triangular beef.
It's like a three-sided, it's like an isohedron.
I see. Okay. I assumed that the tips corresponded to specific parts of the animal. I didn't realize it was just the shape of the cut.
Yeah, no, I think it's called tri-tip because it's just the shape of it. Boy, now I have questions.
Okay, this is like less complicated than I thought, but also I like the idea of polygonal beef.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you a secret. I had the sandwich once on the way down to LA, and it was so good, and we ended up stopping at the same place to charge that I went back to get it again on the way back.
Hang on, I started to say, do you want to name and shame the establishment? But it's not, what's the opposite of name and fame? Do you want to name and fame the restaurant?
Yeah, we can talk about the restaurant. So Harris Ranch is this place midway between, it's pretty much exactly at the midway point between LA and San Francisco on 5. It's like maybe 20 or 30 miles north. And it's been there for a really long time. And the restaurant is famously kind of like steakhouse overpriced. Plus the people are a little bit rude and really the food's not that good. Wait,
rude in a snooty way? Like upper crust of society, or like rude in a, like, I don't have time for your shit. I've just got a job to do.
Kind of the latter. So
Harris Ranch, is that it? I feel like I've heard of it.
Harris Ranch. We used to stop there and get lunch on the way to LA when we would go for tested shoots and stuff like that. Cause we'd often drive down rather than fly. So we stopped. The reason we stopped there is a buttload of chargers, so you never have to wait. And often I will go in and pick up food from the Harris Ranch restaurant, which is like a big fancy sit down place with like Americana stuff jammed on the walls, and like they have a bazillion tables and whatever. Now, the thing I didn't realize is that there's a Harris Ranch Express in the gas station next to the place. Gas station barbecue. I'm going to go and tell you, I have not had over the years a lot of bad barbecue in gas stations.
Wait a minute. Have you had a lot of barbecue in gas stations in general?
Don't you have, like, in Tennessee, when you're driving around Tennessee, you often will pull into like a gas station and there's like a dude with a oil barrel smoker out back.
What?
Do you not get that in North Carolina?
No. Barbecue establishments are unto themselves in my experience.
No, there was this place in Knoxville that was like, it was literally a Citgo station. It was like a third tier gas station, somebody that doesn't do marketing. And there was a guy that would make ribs out back, and they were friggin' incredible ribs.
I bet they were the best ribs of your life.
I mean, let's not get crazy, but they were pretty good ribs and very good for gas station. Anyway, so yeah. So I'll always eat gas station barbecue. You need to get in there and try that. Cause if somebody has a gas station, they're like, you know what? We need to open a barbecue place here. Probably going to be pretty good.
Mm. And they got lots of oil right there, just ready to go.
Oh, Brad, that's the wrong kind of oil. Welcome to Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod. I'm Will.
I'm Brad.
Hello, Brad.
Hi. Welcome back.
I have returned. Mm-hmm. I went to a wedding. I went to three theme parks.
Oh, I didn't. Wait, was the wedding in the same trip as the theme parks?
Yeah, the whole point of the trip was to go to the wedding and the theme parks we tacked on.
Oh, I see. Was it a theme park wedding?
It was not a theme park wedding, but it was a wedding that this was the, I think, fifth try. Because it was originally, like, the invites for the wedding originally went out in February of 2020 October of that year.
Oh, no.
And they kept postponing and postponing and postponing. And they almost did it earlier this year. And then everybody got the Rona the morning before the wedding.
Wow.
And they had to cancel. So,
Wait, canceled the entire wedding the day before?
They had people in from around the world who had to go home and without witnessing the union of their friends.
Man, like, you're probably eating 4 to 5 figures of, like, I assume when you cancel that late, there's a lot of stuff that's non-refundable. That
I didn't ask. Okay. It seemed look, I'm sure it was expensive. Mm-hmm. It was a lovely wedding. It was a great ceremony. We had a really good time. We got
to meet a bunch
of good people.
Yeah.
And I got to meet, it was Frank, who I play PUBG with play PUBG and Fortnite with all the time, his wedding. Frank. So yeah. Congratulations, Frank. But yeah, so we went down for a wedding. We ended up going a few days early for Disneyland.
Yes. And that's what we're here to talk about. The tech of modern theme parks, I guess.
I hadn't been to a theme park since the phone era started, the rise of the modern smartphone.
Dang, really? That's are we defining that as like 2008?
I think 2007, 2008, probably when Absolute started. I don't know.
I mean,
I went to Disney World in like 2005. And then I've been to, I think, Great America a little bit in the early 2009, 2008 type, kind of like before everyone was expected to have a phone. Because like, if you remember, and people may not at this point, but like in the beginning, the iPhone a lot of people looked at it as like, oh, that thing's really stupid expensive and it doesn't really do that much. And then like 3 years into that, all of a sudden you look down and everybody in San Francisco had an iPhone 4 Samsung Galaxy phone. And that was a real, like, the idea that before everyone was expected to have a phone, having a phone was kind of a superpower because you always, mm-hmm. you're able to get information that was important wherever you were, which was novel, right?
And now it has become requisite.
Yeah, now it's just part of the cost of doing business in the modern world. But yeah, I hadn't been to the, I had never been to Disneyland before, and I'd never been to, I hadn't been since the phones became a thing. So the last time I went to Disney World, they had just introduced Fast Passes, which was a thing where you walked up to a little kiosk outside the ride, like the busy rides with the long lines, and you could get a piece of paper that said, come back at this time and you will be able to bypass the line. So it's like you're virtually waiting in line. Which was neat, right? Because it meant you could go ride with a shorter line while you were waiting, but you had to be back within like a 15-minute window.
Did that just in practice just put you in a shorter elite line though, or was it literally just walk right up at your? I mean, did they assign you a time?
So they assigned you a specific time, and usually, and there were a limited number of those slots. And if you missed your time, then you were out of luck. You had to just go wait in the normal line.
Sure, but when it worked as intended, you literally just walked right up and got in.
You would walk right up and usually bypass some significant majority of the people in the queue and go straight to the part where you're moving to get like the last transition into the getting on the ride part. I'm sure people were upset about that at the time, but it actually ended up being nice because anybody could do it. You didn't have to pay anything. I don't think you just walked up to the little thing and, hit the stamp on the piece of paper, spat out, and then you were good to go.
Wait, hang on. You didn't pay for the privilege?
I don't believe that you had to pay for that.
Oh.
I don't remember. It was a long time ago. It was like I said, it was 20 years ago almost.
It seems like the kind of thing they would happily charge you like $100 a day for or something.
Well, I mean, you would think that, but also it's the kind of thing that evened out the lines and shortened the wait times for everybody because it let them like control clumping at the different rides, which is, I think, a judging by the way they treat the parks now, it seems like that's probably a concern. But anyway. Now you go and you spend the whole damn time looking at your phone, which we're going to talk about. You typically, when I go on vacation, like when we went to Tahoe last year, when we went to wherever, my intent is to not spend a lot of time on my phone, especially if I'm spending time with my daughter. So a little bit of a bummer that like so much of the modern Disney experience and theme park experience, frankly, is like, hey, you have to look at your phone to figure out what to do and how to get the thing and how to order food and all this other stuff. So anyway,
maybe we will get into this. Is it a have to look at your phone or is it a can look at your phone for more convenience if you like? Or is it like, hey, this is the only way we do things now?
I think. So there is some stuff that is the latter. A lot of it is if you want to be able to do a lot of stuff in a day or two. Like if you're going to the park for 5 days, you can just leisurely walk around. And if you don't mind waiting in long lines, you can wait in long lines. I don't like waiting in long lines. I don't do well at it.
No, that's not, look, you're paying a lot of money to be there. You have limited time. Like, you got to weigh the cost benefit. But also, is there a human being that has gone for five straight days and lived to tell?
I feel like when I was a kid, you'd go to Disney World for 5 days.
Dang, that is a man.
But that's like Disney and Epcot and MGM Studios all were one big thing down there. And now they have Animal Kingdom and all this other stuff. So I don't know. Like, I don't, Disneyland feels like a 1 or 2 day park to me from, because it's very small. This was the big takeaway from, as a first time Disneyland attendee, is that, wow, it's small compared to Disney, to Magic Kingdom.
Was that the last month's patron episode that in real time, I pulled up the map of Disneyland on Google Maps and I was like, oh my God, it's just like, well, it's like a giant city block and that's kind of it.
Yeah. So apparently when Walt bought that, it was all farmland in the 50s. And it was basically he spent every penny he had buying as much as he could, to the point that like he got friends to build the Disneyland hotel next to it because he couldn't afford to build the hotel and buy the land for the hotel.
Huh.
And didn't buy the hotel back until the 80s. So
is there some weird history of Disneyland? I'm sure reams has been written about it. Have I read that it was like his like ultimate lifelong dream to build theme park?
Yep. Huh. Yep. So that was it. There's a really good documentary on Disney Plus about it. It's the Imagineering story, I think is what it's called. And it's a delight. It was informative and good. So the interesting thing about Disneyland versus Disney World is that when Disneyland opened, they kind of kept the stuff that Walt worked on the same. So there's like a reverence for the work that was done on the original Disneyland. And so I think all of those rides are still there. Like the Jungle Cruise and Autopia and teacups, the Mad Hatter teacups and Mad Tea Party teacups. And the carousel and Mr. Toad and Peter Pan and like the Abe Lincoln telling stories and all of those things are as they were.
Oh, hang on. It opened 1955. And those attractions are still vintage 50s?
Pretty much. Yeah.
Aside from maintenance.
I don't know. Like, unlike, say, Pirates of the Caribbean, which now has Johnny Depp in it. Right. Which was a 60s era ride.
The ride at the park has
the ride at the park still? Has integrated Johnny Depp. Yeah.
I'm surprised they have not pulled him back out.
I mean, yeah. I think that it takes a while to do that stuff.
Sure. Because
it was a fairly, as I recall, the ride was down for a fairly long time when Johnny Depp got added. They didn't add Eddie Murphy to the Haunted Mansion. So.
Well, that's a shame.
Yeah. So those original rides, like, okay, so let me tell you how the day went when we went the first time, because we stayed at the hotel, one of the hotels on property, which meant we were able to get in 30 minutes early before they opened the doors for everybody else, which it turns out is very convenient, because we were able to get in the first 30 minutes and ride a bunch of the, like, our initial plan was get in, haul ass to the Star Wars ride and get on that first so that we don't have to wait in a 2-hour line for that later or pay actual money to skip the line on that one, which I have feelings about.
Is that that's still the thing? I assume like that's the current super popular, everybody wants to do it first thing.
So Rise of the Resistance had at any given point during the day had like it opens late. It had a 2-hour line to get on at any given point during the day. It's like a 25 minute ride, so it's not like a terrible ratio of time in line to time on the ride. But it's an intense line. And so if you can get in there early, then you can ride it first. But then we were like, okay, wait, we have a 9-year-old with us and she's never been to a theme park like this before. So if we take her to this 21st century technological marvel and she rides that first, she's going to go on Mr. Toad and be like, what the fuck is this? So instead, we were like, let's get on Space Mountain first, ride the roller coaster. And then, because there's usually a pretty good line for that. And then, and it's worth mentioning, anybody can download the app and see what the wait times are at any given time. So Gina, like, spent a couple of days prior and she would just check in when she had an idle moment and look to see what the wait times were like at any given point during the day. So she had a sense of, like, what happens at different, because there's an ebb and flow to the park, it turns out.
Is that the Disney Genie service?
So that is the Disneyland app.
Okay.
The Disney Genie service is different. We'll talk about that in a minute.
Okay.
So we ended up going to a bunch of the early rides, the stuff that was like opening day rides. So we rode Peter Pan and Mr. Toad and the teacups and Alice in Wonderland, which came later, and like Pinocchio and some other stuff that's all kind of clumped up in this small area in the center of the park. And like those rides hold up incredibly well. I had never ridden Peter Pan before. And it's like this overhead, like the cart that you get in is like a pirate ship, and it's on an overhead track, and the overhead track goes up and down. And I think the tagline of it is you'll believe you can fly because like it does little swoops and stuff, and it feels awesome. It's really fun.
Feel it in the gut.
Yeah. And they tell stories, and like the whole thing is handled really, really well. Even they're almost like retcons, but like there's a Pinocchio ride that was done in the 80s that's in that same area that has this incredible projection of the blue fairy that turns him into a real boy at the end. I don't have any idea how they did that. Like she just is projected into space and it looks like a hologram. And I'm just like, this is freaking cool. I need to go look up, and I'm sure there's 50 YouTube videos that explain how this works. I'm going to do that later on. I don't want to spoil. Oh God.
I hadn't even thought about that. Yes, I understand there is an extreme subculture of theme park goers on YouTube and other.
There is a scene. Yes.
Yeah. A scene is the word for it. Is Space Mountain original? No,
Space Mountain was built in the 70s.
70s. Yes. Late 70s. How does that hold up? So I've ridden Disney World Space Mountain, and I don't know if they are identical or were. Okay. Space Mountain in my memory was like. Okay, generally, I think of Disneyland/World as like these rides are not super scary or super fast. They're more for like vibes, you know, they're more for like scenery and animatronics and telling a story and kind of putting you in a place. But they're not like hair raising, stomach turning.
Yeah.
Except for Space Mountain. Like in my memory, Space Mountain is like that's the hardcore roller coaster.
So there are three or four, depending on whether you count Splash Mountain, the log flume as like a hardcore ride. But Space Mountain, because it's in the dark and you can't see where you're going, is intense. So it's a roller coaster. It's built in a big dark dome. There's a bunch of stars like that are fiber optic stars all through the walls, or maybe they're just LED stars now. I couldn't tell. But you're basically, the story is you're going on this space journey and like you get the dark roller coaster the shit out of you as you're doing it. Space Mountain was, I think, my daughter's favorite ride at Disneyland. We rode it two or three times. Yeah.
No kidding. Okay. I haven't ridden it in God, 30 plus years.
It's a real good first roller coaster.
Yeah. All I remember of it is dark and lights.
So it doesn't go upside down. It doesn't do anything super scary. It just is like really exciting. And you're constantly being kind of thrashed around, and you feel like you're going insanely fast because you're in the dark. Now, when I was at Disney World last time, the lights came on when we were going up the ramp at Space Mountain. Oh, no. I will tell you, it is the most scary ride I've ever been on because the clearances are so high that I don't put my hands up on Space Mountain anymore. I'm sure it's fine too. I'm good. Anyway,
was that accidental, or was that like that was unscheduled or not?
I think they had a maintenance problem, or somebody dropped something. They had to go get it or what. I don't know, man. But like they were like, the lights are coming on in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. And then the lights came on.
What was on the inside of the walls? Could you see, was there like kind of dampening material?
It's all like structure. It's all okay. All you see is like, it's like being on the inside of the Statue of Liberty or something, right? You see all the superstructure stuff.
Right. Of course. I just remember. I didn't know if they had like some like black felt on the walls or something to increase the, no.
It's just real dark in there, man.
Okay.
Yeah. And the ride is kind of far from the walls. So I think that's how I assume that there was some sort of sound dampening on the inside of the walls, so it doesn't make a ton of noise. But
God, actually, and just the very idea of an indoor roller coaster is kind of wild when you think about it, because there are not a lot of those that I'm aware of.
Yeah, it was. I think that was probably pretty novel at the time. The ones that are indoors are usually pretty small. I think they're like kid rides. The other thing about it is, like, one of the technological things that changed over time is they stopped trying to put speakers in the world and they just put them on your car and timed the sound playback to like match, you know, where you are in the ride.
Yeah.
And then the later rides, they even do like, it seems like they're doing like HRTF positional shit on like the, because there's multiple speakers throughout the car. Maybe they're probably not doing HRTFs, but they're positioning sound in the world using multiple speakers inside the cars, which is a trip. As opposed to like It's a Small World where they just blast that fucking song at maximum volume. I'm gonna go and tell you. We broke down on It's a Small World. It was a dark time.
What?
And we were like stuck for like 5 minutes. The end of the world, but
wait, did the music continue while you were stuck?
Never stops, Brad.
Oh no. God.
Never stops. I did tell my daughter that if any children who get lost and become the property of the Disney Corporation have to sit underneath It's a Small World and crank the kids,
they become part of their life.
Yeah. So it was interesting seeing like the stratification of the park and seeing like the opening rides and the 50s rides, like Alice in Wonderland, like the things that opened shortly after the park, like Alice in Wonderland. And then the 60s stuff like Pirates and Haunted Mansion, where they got really good animatronics and they got good at like Haunted Mansion has these hologram projections that are a trip. Like they remain amazing, where they have like ghosts flying around a big room, eating food and stuff like that. It was dressed for Halloween while we were there, which means it had the Nightmare Before Christmas stuff in there. So we saw the Oogie Boogie and Jack Skellington and all that stuff.
That seems like a movie I should see at some point.
If you like Tim Burton's 80s bullshit, 80s and 90s bullshit, it is very good.
I do.
Yeah,
man, we shouldn't get into it, but since we're talking about Disney, we babysat small children last weekend.
Ooh.
And so there were a fair number of Disney movies played over the weekend, which got me down a rabbit hole of reading about like pretty much the whole history of Walt Disney Animation, but primarily like the kind of dip in the 80s and then the sort of 90s renaissance,
early 90s rebound. Yeah.
Musical kind of starting with sort of what Little Mermaid's Tarzan, I think, is considered the Golden Age Renaissance.
Like the high point for me there is like Little Mermaid to Aladdin, probably Lion King, Aladdin, Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast.
Yeah.
Yes. Tarzan's okay.
Yes. I can't remember why I brought that up. There was a reason something you were talking about reminded me of that. But
well, I mean, they got good at anime, like they got really good at animation, at 2D animation. And like Nightmare Before Christmas is incredible stop motion animation.
That's what it was finding out. Number one, not only how many kind of big current and recent big name directors, creators, et cetera, have come through that studio, but also how many of them were fired from it. Like Tim Burton, Brad Bird, two or three others that I'm trying to think of that are like very well-known people in animation these days, like all went to Disney Animation and all got fired for various infractions and then turned around and became huge.
Yeah. Well, and then at the same time, Pixar was spinning up, and then Toy Story came out at the end of the decade, and you're like, oh, right. Wow. Yeah. This is a different thing.
Also, this is ancient history, and there's maybe a documentary out there or something, but they were getting into a lot of digital ink and paint stuff with those early 90s, like moving into Beauty and the Beast and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like I didn't realize they weren't just straight up like painting cells at that point.
Yeah. My understanding is that the tools have not changed a whole lot in that space in the last 20 years. So the 60s rides were neat. The 70s and 80s stuff is all the action stuff, like Big Thunder Mountain and Splash Mountain and Space Mountain and all that. And then we got to Star Wars.
Actually, real quick before we get into the Star Wars stuff proper, I've seen the name Hyperspace Mountain floating around. Is that a thing?
I don't know that one. Huh. That wasn't at Disneyland.
Okay.
Hyperspace Mountain might be a thing that they do to fancy up Space Mountain during a specific season. They do a lot of that.
Yes, it is in fact seasonal. 2015, November 2015, it sounds like they dressed up Space Mountain.
Might have been an anniversary or something, but yeah, I was a little bummed that Haunted Mansion was like, you know, Jack Skellington, because I would have liked to take the kiddo and have her see the real one, because it's creepy but not scary.
Yeah, that's so. Space Mountain and Haunted Mansion are basically the two things that I remember the most from going to Disney World as a kid. Well, I was actually 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea also was pretty memorable.
Oh, you mean Finding Nemo? Oh,
no, don't.
Nemo's Undersea Adventure, Brad. God
damn it, no. Are you serious?
They do a really good thing in that where they I like that ride a lot. It's a goofy ride. My daughter was completely unimpressed, but they hide all the transitions from like as you're going super deep by just blowing a shitload of bubbles along the windows. So you can't really see anything for a minute.
Sure.
Like it's some real 60s era technology.
Wait, do they have that one at Disneyland too?
Or is it at Disneyland too? Yeah.
Oh, did you did that one?
Yeah, man, we rode that.
Look, I have nothing against Finding Nemo, but I really loved that Jules Verne era kind of vibe to everything.
As somebody who saw that who rode that Jules Verne ride in like 2005, the things that I was amazed by when I was 9 did not hold up. Squid fight, pretty underwhelming.
Fair. Yeah. Okay. Well, I was mightily impressed at the time, but so Haunted Mansion does hold up, because that one to me, like I vaguely remember the holograms, and I extra remember the creepy, very subtly animating paintings hanging everywhere.
Yeah, the paintings and the hologram stuff is still incredible. The animatronics are neat. The one in Disneyland works the other way. So I think Disney World, you go up in the when you get in the elevator.
I don't remember.
The one in Disneyland, you go down.
Okay.
It was weird because, well, so the other thing it super holds up. It's my absolute favorite, I think, of all the things that are Disney exclusive rides or whatever. The thing that I'll say about it is, it's interesting because it also highlights the different eras of like their line management technology. So like in the early park days, they clearly just have queues where you go in and like you stand in a line and then you get, then they stop the thing for a minute, you jump on and then they start the thing and again, you go back. And they probably work like ski lifts where they can decouple the ride from the track, from the, you know, the pull track or whatever for just a second. So people can get on. But that causes it to clump up, and like it means that the rate at which they can get people on. Like if you played a lot of Roller Coaster Tycoon, you know the rate at which you get people on and off the ride is the most important thing. It's all that matters.
Yeah.
So then Haunted Mansion is the first thing that I rode that they have the people mover, where you step on a conveyor belt when you get off the queue, and the conveyor belt moves at the same speed as the ride, so the ride never slows down.
Huh.
So you just get on the people mover, you walk up, and you step right on. It's like your relative motion is exactly the same, but no difference in speed. They do that on a bunch of stuff now, including like the log flumes at California Adventure or tube rides at California Adventure and stuff like that, even, which puts you in a real weird brain space where it feels like the concrete base of the ride is moving,
yes,
but the thing you're standing on isn't.
You're stationary, man. That's a trip.
Yeah.
I assume the people mover is not that fast.
The people movers, it goes at a pretty good clip. Huh. Like it's not slow on the Haunted Mansion, at least at Disneyland. You accelerate to like fast people movers, like
airport style.
Maybe it's as fast or faster than an airport one would be. Huh. Yeah.
Okay.
There wasn't a risk of you falling down, but like if you were a little unsteady, maybe, I guess. One of the things that I like Haunted Mansion also sends people down in batches. So they're like, you go into this room and it's like the waiting room. There's 5 doors out of that. So they, you know, that means that they can keep the elevator cycling constantly. So there's always a group going down, always a group loading in, which is interesting. And then you have stuff like the rebadged Tower of Terror, which is the Guardians of the Galaxy ride at California Adventure, where they load in an entire group of people, you know, 10 cars worth of people, 2 stories high. But then that ride, there's no movement on the line for the 2 minutes that the ride's going. Right. So you're like, you're going up and down, up and down, up and down. And then they unload everybody and then they start loading the new people in immediately. But there's no continual flow on those.
What is California Adventure? Is it extension?
Yeah, so California Adventure is an entirely separate theme park that's like half the size of Disneyland. That's on the south end it's on the south end of that same block, and it has a lot of Pixar stuff. It has a lot of it's mostly Pixar stuff. There's a huge lagoon at one end where they do this World of Color thing that I definitely want to talk about because it's kind of magic. It's kind of incredible, actually. It's like a light and laser show and water show, where they have all these water cannons under this lagoon that blast water up, and then they project scenes from movies onto the water in the air.
That's good.
They do a lot of lasers through the things to highlight the different parts of the water at the specific times. It is a phenomenally cool 25 or 30 minute thing that they do instead of fireworks because they're in downtown Anaheim and they don't want to annoy people, I assume.
I guess that's probably... Actually, I've been meaning to ask. I mean, okay, if I remember, Disney World is kind of in a swamp, right?
Yeah.
Sort of.
No, that's right.
Yeah, and again, we've said, you know, Disneyland is right there in the middle of Anaheim. Like, When you're in the middle of the park, are you aware that you're in the middle of Anaheim? Like, can you kind of see the city proper outside, or like, are the sight lines like such that you're kind of ensconced in a little Disney bubble?
The sight lines are such that you have no idea. You don't see building town. You don't see high rises or anything. Like at some point, the park's small enough that at some points, like, you see the Matterhorn, you see bits of the Star Wars land, or stuff like that. But for the most part, no, you don't see the city. And there's bits of California Adventure, I guess, where you can see like a convention center outside the park and stuff like that.
You know, I assume everything's so chaotic you can't pick up traffic noise outside and stuff.
No. And there are some places, like there's this wall at the end of California Adventure where they're like highlighting, because California Adventure is all things California. I think people made fun of it when it opened because it seemed a little goofy. But like they have a huge perspective wall, like you would put at the end of a movie shot, like the end of a street at a movie shot, to make it look like whatever area you want it to look like, which it turns out is a really fun place to go up and take stupid photos, because you can like get right up on somebody and make them look really tiny, or you can get like a wide angle shot from below and make them look like they're like 50 feet tall. But that perspective wall is like 100 feet tall. It looks like it's really, really tall. And I assume that they're probably blocking like some building that's been built just outside the park or something there. But yeah, for the most part, you feel as isolated from the real world in Disneyland as you would in Disney World. It's also much, at least this time of year, the weather was much more temperate, because in Florida we would have been roasting. Okay, I want to talk about the Star Wars stuff, because it's a trip. The Star Wars land is like a 21st century. It takes the things that Universal did with Harry Potter, where the queues for the rides have like, you know, are part of the attraction, right? So like, when you're in the queue for a Harry Potter ride, you see Dumbledore and you see like the paintings on the walls all move, and you walk through the classrooms from the books or the movies. And
oh, wow.
And, like,
that's pretty elaborate.
Yeah. It is intense to the point. So we went to Universal after this, and it is intense to the point that we went back to wait in line to see some of the stuff that we missed when we used the fast pass on the first day. The Star Wars stuff is the same. Like, the whole area of the park is interactive. Like, there's people walking around. The Disneyland employees that are called cast members are walking around in like Star Wars costumes. And there's like a First Order area, and there's a Resistance area. And if you're in the First Order area, you're going to see some like Imperial officer looking people that yell at you. And if you're in the Resistance area, you see like Resistance dirtbag looking people, you know, that are clearly scrappy underdogs. But there's a game that runs underneath the whole area that you play on your phone.
Huh.
So like it's like a Pokemon Go situation where you walk around the world and like it'll pop up. The phone will pop up and say, hey, there's a quest that needs to be done. Can you do it? We have a mission for you. Can you take it on? And you look at it, and it gives you faction in either like the smuggler group, the Resistance group, or the First Order group. And it'll be like, complete a little puzzle on your phone, and then some shit in the park around you will happen. So like sometimes it's like you click a button and open a door. Sometimes it's like a panel lights up. Sometimes it's like Kylo Ren's TIE fighter thing will like make smoke and shit will happen on it.
Okay. That's kind of cool. I started to say like using the phone to lubricate the, you know, aspects of the park that have a lot of friction, waiting and trying to get food and stuff is one thing, but like, actively pushing you to do a thing on your phone when you're surrounded by all this magic and wonder maybe is a little questionable. But then on the other hand, when you say like do a thing on your phone and make something like weird happen in the real world, actually sounds pretty awesome.
Well, and also this didn't happen to us because I didn't spend the time, because I was there to spend time with my kid, not grind faction with Kylo Ren. But sure. But like if you go to the park on the reg and you grind faction with Kylo Ren, eventually, theoretically, you're going to get pulled into something by the cast members.
I can't believe you just spoke that sentence aloud.
Look, which part?
Go to the park regularly and grind faction with Kylo.
No. And sometimes you got to grind that faction. Like it's weird though, right? Because it feels like you're spending a lot of money to go to this park, and like I could walk around my backyard and play Pokemon Go if I wanted. Right.
It's maybe a little questionable, although like it kind of, I mean, you tell me, it almost reminds me of the thing you've said a lot about like coding pure software is one thing, but like coding to make our Arduino lights blink is much more satisfying. Like doing a computer thing to make a real world thing happen has got a certain satisfaction to it. So like the idea of opening a door.
I will tell you, when I made the lights blink and the door open and Kylo Ren's spaceship do something, everyone in the party was excited.
That's cool.
Like
that's
cool. Everybody was stoked about it.
Yeah.
The weird part about that specific part of the park is there's not a lot of food. So like there's a place to get some wraps and there's a cantina where you can get drinks and blue milk. I don't think you can get drinks.
It's gotta be blue milk.
There's blue milk. We did not try the blue milk. I like the last thing I want when I'm walking around a theme park and it's 90 degrees is a nice big glass of milk. But
I wonder if it's flavored. I wonder if they add, it's probably all sugar in there.
I'm sure it's a lot of sugar. But the rides were pretty incredible. Like the Rise of the Resistance ride is 25 minutes and you can use the phone and let's talk about the Genie Plus stuff in a minute. Cause it's goofy. But you like, there's a part where you walk through some stuff and you like, when you get to the ride portion and like you get a mission from Rey and you know, BB-8 and like characters from the postquels. Then you get captured by the First Order and they yell at you and are like, go stand in the line, prisoners. And you go get in a prison cell. There's a prison break. There's all sorts of stuff happens. Like you end up in a spaceship stuff. You get sent to space. You ride in these, like you get in these people movers eventually that are essentially they're a trip. So you get in these people movers and they're like, you're in like a ride on rails, right? Except they're on Omni wheels or something. And they're just driving around free on the ground. Like there's no tracks.
Huh?
So the you're in with like two or three other cars of these people movers. Stormtroopers are shooting at you. Everybody's yelling. There's all sorts of exciting shit happening. There's lightsabers. And then all of a sudden, you're just doing a ballet with these other carts full of people in this open area. And like you see AT-ATs and more stormtroopers. And like it is. We literally got off the ride. We only rode it once because I didn't want to pay multiple times to skip the 2 hour line. And I wasn't going to wait in 2 hour line. But it was very much a, hey, a bunch of shit's going to happen to you. You're going to see some Star Wars stuff. Somebody's going to cut through some stuff with a lightsaber. There's going to be a hole in the side of the spaceship and all the air is going to get sucked out. And it's going to actually feel like that. Like it was a full assault on the senses for about 25 minutes.
A full assault on the senses is a pretty good description of the theme park experience generally.
It really was.
Yeah. How was a lot of the stuff represented? Like, was it animatronic or was there like video wall stuff going on? Or
it was a little bit of everything. Like they had Star Wars looking holograms for some of the characters. There were animatronics. There were screens that were placed far enough away in such a perspective that you couldn't tell that they were screens probably. There's apparently multiple paths through that ride based on whether or not, like, if animatronics go down, then they have different paths through the ride.
Wait, they have redundancy in their ride?
Yeah, well, because like, look, if people come to the park to see Rise of the Resistance and the animatronic breaks is down for 3 hours, then they have to have something else in place, right?
Fair.
Apparently, they also, if the lines are too long, they skip some of the early portions of the ride where that are more stage setting and queuing, and you just go straight to the ride part.
Just to move people through faster.
Just to move people through faster, I believe. Yeah. But it was a little intense. Like my daughter was a little nervous when the First Order people were yelling at you. She's like, I don't like this. This is scary.
How hard were the actors going for it?
They were fucking going at it hard, man. Yeah, they were like, like if I stepped off the red line to take a picture, they're like, get back on your red line, scum. And yeah, it was. But then I think somebody heard her say, I'm a little freaked out, Dad. And they kind of cooled it with us. So it was, wow, yeah, because, okay, of course, Disney always knows.
Hey, interactive.
Yeah, it was a little bit like I generally don't like interactive theater stuff. And it was a little bit on the edge for that for me. But it was an interesting experience for sure.
No. What is the, I'm sure you didn't touch this at all, but do you know anything about that kind of full weekend
experience? That's a Disney World.
Oh, was that a Disney World?
Star like, Cruiser. Yeah.
Okay. Cause I mean, I don't know that you have an answer. I was going to say though, like, I'm a little surprised they built this at Disneyland to begin with. Cause there's so much more space at Disney. I've just always had the sense that Disney World was the more trafficked and popular park.
I don't know. I don't have any idea what the traffic is like at the different ones. This place was packed full. I think the Star Wars they're viewing as the future of the, like, these rides are clearly, they've spent an incredible amount of time and money developing them because they're unlike anything I've seen anywhere else ever.
I wonder how they feel about having based the entire thing or themed the entire thing with the sequel films, considering they themselves have de-emphasized those films now as hard as they can.
Well, so they're starting to put other stuff in now. Like originally, I think the pitch was this is only going to be the postquels, like the JJ trilogy. But I think there's like Mandalorian. I think there's stuff from the TV shows coming in now.
That was my guess, is they'll kind of subtly start dressing it with other stuff over time.
Yeah. I mean, I that only works if they go forward in time. I don't think they can put High Republic stuff in there, right?
Probably not.
Yeah. And anyway, maybe we'll see Ahsoka walking around with head tentacles or something at some point. But yeah, the Millennium Falcon ride was the other big Star Wars ride. There's only two Star Wars rides. The other stuff that you do there is like a extended purchasing experience, like buying a lightsaber or customizing your lightsaber, or buying a droid, customizing your droid.
Oh, I didn't know you could do a droid. Did you do either of those?
I did not spend $200 on a lightsaber.
Man, that's like, I almost wish there was a reduced fee where you could just like go in and build it and play with it for 10 minutes and then give it back. Cause like, I don't need a lightsaber in my house, but I would like to mess around with that process.
That was precisely my reaction and and my feeling. And I was like, no, I'm probably good. If we go back at some point, the kiddo is interested in Star Wars and she wants to do a lightsaber, we'll do a lightsaber, but I'm okay. The Millennium Falcon ride was much more of a traditional kind of theme park ride. You get to go walk into the Millennium Falcon. There's a waiting area where you're assigned a color and you like get into the lobby, like the area with the Jarek table and like Chewbacca's bed and all that stuff. And you can kind of hang out there and take pictures for a little bit.
Wow. You know the name of the table. I'm impressed.
Well, I mean, we did a video tested with the folks who recreated the hollow chess.
Yes.
For Force Awakens. But yeah, and then you walk down a hallway and there's a bunch of different hallways and all of them lead to the Millennium Falcon cockpit, and you get into the kind of 4D, you literally get into a recreation of the Millennium Falcon cockpit, which I'm a fool because I didn't take any pictures and I was too busy looking around and poking buttons and stuff.
I mean, that's the thing to do, right? Like, it's nice to have a memento, but also like you kind of want to just live in the moment.
It was very cool to walk. I mean, I'm going to go and tell you. 12-year-old me was exploding because I was walking around the Millennium Falcon cockpit.
Is it convincing? Like, it's to scale and everything is
just
kind of believable.
Yeah, like you sit down in chairs that look like the chairs. They're not like movie chairs. They're like theme park ride chairs. You have to buckle in, put the seatbelt on, and all that. But yeah, it was very believable.
At any point before this, have you seen an entire fully realized external Millennium Falcon, or have you walked into a building that this cockpit is contained inside?
Oh, so the Millennium Falcon is just sitting out in the middle of the parking, like it's parked when you go in. So it's a thing that you can take pictures with outside when you're walking around without going on the ride or anything.
Is it life size? I mean, quote unquote, life
size. It's big. Yeah. I'll send you some pictures.
Okay. Does it have any interior at all, or is it just a?
So the whole ride spins you around so you feel like you're getting back on that Millennium Falcon. You are absolutely not getting back on that Millennium Falcon.
Sure.
Yeah. So you get on, you get in the cockpit, you sit down, they assign roles. So Gina and my daughter were pilots. I was a gunner and we had two other people in the back that were engineers. And the pilots, one, it's like Space Team kind of.
Okay.
Like the pilots, one person goes left and right and the other person goes up and down.
Okay.
And the up and down person also gets to pull the hyperspace levers.
Ooh.
Which was, I'm going to tell you, extreme jealousy because Gina was pulling the hyperspace levers.
That's the money shot.
But when you're flying, the 4D stuff is romping you around based on like the armature that the cockpit is on is moving based on their movements. And then the gunners have some buttons to press. And then I don't know what the engineers did.
Did anyone at any point scream play your class?
No, nobody screamed play your class.
Okay.
But I'm going to go and tell you, putting a 9-year-old and somebody who has a hard time with flight sim stuff where forward is down and back is up in charge of the flying the spaceship meant that we smashed into a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'm surprised they don't let you self-assign. I'm surprised they assign those roles out. Is that just for expediency, maybe just to keep things moving so people aren't like endlessly wringing their hands over what they get to play?
My guess is if we had five or six people, they would have let us pick whatever we wanted. But since we were a mixed group, they just assigned so that there was less, you know, less drama with your friend for the next 6 minutes.
Yeah.
So, and also they definitely didn't put the kiddo in the having to pull the hyperspace thing. Cause I don't know what happens if you don't pull the hyperspace lever. So we smashed into a bunch of stuff. You're assigned a score at the end.
Huh?
Like it was weird. Cause like, it's a really incredible ride, but it also feels like that technology, like have one person fly side to side, one person fly up and down, have different people doing different things. If put into the context of like a space team communications game versus a Star Wars spectacle game, would be really, really fun. Like imagine having a full scale 5D space team, like where the ride's thrashing around, you doing all sorts of cool stuff.
Oh yeah.
Versus
like having to run around a cockpit and like pull levers and hit buttons and
yeah.
Sounds awesome.
Yeah. The other thing about the ride is because you have to look at the controls and because you're looking at the buttons on the side and stuff like that, I didn't spend as much time looking at the actual stuff on the screen in front of the, cause you know, you're flying around in front of a big, huge projection screen.
Right.
I didn't spend as much time looking at stuff on the screen as I was like looking to my left at a panel of five buttons to see which button I had to press.
Sure.
Which feels a little weird.
Yeah. Is the projection screen is like set back from the cockpit. It's not like part of the cockpit.
It's far enough back that you don't realize it's a projection screen if you're not really paying attention.
Sense of depth and kind of externality or whatever. Yeah.
And you can't see the edges of it at all. So
do you think, okay, I've never been to an escape room.
Yeah.
But the thing you're describing, the kind of like fully realized like tactile space team, like, is that just an escape room to begin with? Because the thing I was going to ask is like, is I wonder if there's like some kind of market opportunity for like something like an escape room, but something that is much more explicitly like space team or like keep talking and nobody explodes, that type of thing. Like that seems like somebody who put a lot of work into really building out a lot of mechanical features you could fiddle with, like was
so
do pretty well with something like that.
Most like entry level escape rooms are really low budge. It's like
okay,
IKEA furniture that's been tarted up. There's a couple of really, really high dollar, high impact ones. There's one at the Palace of Fine Arts. Hold on, let me see what the company's called. I can't remember off the top of my head. But they have three or four escape rooms, three rooms there now, Houdini, Roosevelt, and Edison at Palace Games. Okay. And they're exceptional, like really and truly incredible. And they do a lot of like, Arduino driven, microcontroller driven, like wired in crazy, crazy behind the scenes, Disney style Imagineer type business there.
Okay.
But they don't do like moving rooms and stuff like that. That would be a bit much.
That sounds like that's veering pretty close to what I was thinking about anyway.
Yeah. I would love to see them apply this technology to like a Buzz Lightyear game that is for people that have to do space team shit for 5 minutes while they're in a cockpit. Right. Anyway, I definitely felt like this was space team inspired as it was just so because they wanted to give everybody interactive stuff to do.
You're just making me miss Space Team.
Space Team is really good, it turns out. And that's pretty much it for like, we went on, there's a linear accelerated roller coaster at California Adventure that has a loop, which is crazy that there's a Disney roller coaster that has a loop. Mm-hmm. It was a lot of like, the whole thing was a lot of fun. The thing that bummed me out is that especially in the first few hours you're in the park, you're using your phone all the time because they've moved away from the fast pass thing where you go get the piece of paper, obviously, cause it's 2022, to a thing that works on your phone. And I think you pay $20 a person for access to the Genie Plus feature, which is the fast pass type feature. There's all sorts of rules that they absolutely, I'm sure, intentionally don't explain clearly. Like every 2 hours you can add a new fast pass. So you can only have one, they call it lightning lane. Sorry. You only have one lightning lane active at a time. Except at the moment you cash one in while you're in the line for that ride, you can sign up for your next one.
Huh.
You can also sign up for one every 2 hours, whether you use the last one or not. So the upshot is you can get like a Space Mountain for the end of the day when it gets long while you're waiting for something else, and still have another ride if you're going to go get dinner or something like that. The Genie Plus thing also includes all the photos that are taken on the rides. So, you know, the thing where you like go down Space Mountain, everybody has the funny look on their face. And then you take the picture with the code on the end of the ride. You can download those pictures later. So you don't have to pay any extra money for those, which is nice.
That's cool. And those are just delivered to you kind of automatically.
You have to know the code for your car.
Okay.
So basically when you leave the ride, there's a big wall of screens with like 50 different pictures on them. And you find yourself on the screens, and then we just took a picture of those screens. So we get the code, and you type the code in the app later, and you can just
download. But if you neglect to do that, you're kind of out of luck.
Well, if you miss the code, you're out of luck.
Yeah.
They also have photographers just in the park standing there in front of like cool shots that you can wait in line for and take a picture. And they do like, they'll superimpose some stuff. like we did one in a Cars Land where they put a trophy in the kiddo's hands. Hmm. We didn't do a whole lot of that, but the photographers were really like the ones that we did, the photographers were really great. Like I was really pleasantly surprised. And the photos turned out really well, and they did a good job like getting the kids to be normal and all that stuff. You have to unless you want to wait in line for food, you can also order food in advance from the park. Some food places don't even have the ability to take money anymore.
Huh.
So you have to use the app to order in order to get food from some of the restaurants and to book reservations and stuff like that.
I guess it goes without saying to really do much of anything with this app. You have to load payment information into it.
Let's see.
Or I probably just interfaces with Apple Pay or Google, whatever, right?
I think it interfaces with Apple Pay, but also it's how you buy your tickets for the park. So you've already given them your credit. Like by the time you're in the park, they already have everything they need to know about you, Brad.
Of course. Of course.
But like the benefit is you can look at wait times and stuff like that in the app. So the wait times were wildly inaccurate in a lot of cases. So sometimes it would be like there's a 15-minute wait time, and then we went to Autopia and we sat in line for an hour and then we rode Autopia, which was not worth waiting in line for an hour for.
What is Autopia?
Autopia is it was called Greenlight Go in Florida. It's one of the early first day rides. So you get in these gas powered go-karts and can drive around this big track. The challenge of it is when they launched, I don't think it had rails, so you could just drive the carts anywhere and people were driving them out into like paths and shit.
Rules.
But now the problem is there are a bunch of really old go-karts and they stall out all the time, and like they never went really fast in the first place. But it is like when you're a little kid, it's fun because you get to steer kind of within the confines of the rails, I guess.
It was part of Tomorrowland, it looks like.
It is still part of Tomorrowland. It's next to the monorail.
I love, that's a good name, Tomorrowland.
The problem with it is the queue is all up in the fume zone for the two-stroke gas. Like they need to switch that thing to electric is my takeaway.
It's like it is these days powered by Honda.
Yeah, we saw Osimo. Osimo featured prominently in the queue experience for that ride. Like the phone thing was a mixed bag. Once we got the hang of it, then you just remembered to the moment you cashed in one of your lightning lanes to like while you're waiting in the short line to fill in to sign up for the next one. And that let us ride like 20 things on the first day. Like shitload of rides.
That's pretty impressive. I mean, I was going to say, though, like this sounds like you need some pretty damn good organizational skills. Like you need like a day planner or something. Like you really need to stay on top of this stuff to kind of optimize.
Which
sort of sounds like work, but
it was a little bit. I mean, I like playing games like Factorio where you min max stuff, and it became very much that. Like, okay, if we go, the lightning lane for this is an hour and a half from now, and there's three rides with 5 minute waits between here and there. So let's go ride those three rides on the way, and I don't know if that's healthy. It became part of the game for me. But yeah, it was a fascinating experience. I didn't expect to, like, I expected it to be a tolerable thing at best, and it ended up being quite fun. And I mean, the one thing I will say is that the entire, well, okay, so unlike Universal, which is designed to be a place that you come in and then buy a bunch of shit in a store that looks like the Quickie Mart,
mm-hmm.
or like Hogwarts or like a, you know, the wand place, whatever.
Wait, hang on. Is there Simpsons stuff at Universal?
Oh yeah. There's a whole Simpsons land.
Wait, I'm trying to think what was the corporate IP connection there that allowed that to happen? Because obviously now Simpsons is part of Disney.
Yeah, I'm sure it was somebody signed away theme park rights for Disney at 20th Century Fox at some point to NBC, right?
Sure.
But it's I had a Krusty Burger. Mm-hmm. I had a Krusty Burger. It was as you would expect.
Was it a hamburger?
It was a hamburger with some cheese and pickles.
Was there literally anything novel about it?
There was Krusty sauce on it. It was wrapped in a Krusty thing. And the person that I bought it from was dressed like the Krusty employees.
Okay. So did they have the same look of like gloom and despair on their face?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah.
What does Krusty sauce taste like?
It's like mayonnaise and pickle relish and ketchup mixed up, probably.
So like a Big Mac.
It's a Thousand Island dressing, if I had to guess.
Yeah. Okay.
The fries were pretty good, I'll say. And they had the fancy Coke machine, so you could get like whatever, you get like a cherry vanilla orange Fanta if you wanted something that was horrifying.
Were the fries crusty?
No, they were crisp. They were lightly salted. Mm. It was a good fry experience, okay. I'm gonna say. All right. Yeah. Okay. The Simpsons ride was underwhelming. So the Universal rides are all like 4D for the most part.
When you say 4D, I mean, can you define that?
Yeah, it's
for the record.
You get in a seat, you buckle in the seat, and then you watch a screen while the seat's like moving around and shaking. And then I think the 4D is that sometimes it squirts you or blasts you with a fan.
I see. Of course, the fourth dimension, water in the face.
Yeah, water and wind. The studio tour ride, which I thought was going to be really cheesy, is the thing famously noted in like the end of Animal House, where one of the characters becomes a tour at Universal Studios Hollywood, a tour guide at Universal Studios Hollywood. Mm-hmm. You get in this big long bus thing with a bunch of seats, and then like it is not just you driving around the studio back a lot looking at places where movies were made, is what I'll say. Like they bring you into some dark ride stuff, and apparently they buckle that thing onto armatures and some shit happens. It was fun. It was that was cheesy, but fun, I would say. And Vin Diesel talks about family. So, you know, must be good at that yes, point.
Of course.
But yeah, Universal seems much more like a place where you go, and like the other thing is the Harry Potter ride, which is fraught for a whole bunch of reasons, but we weren't going to Universal and not riding the Harry Potter ride.
I mean, they've already got your money at that point.
Yeah. The Harry Potter ride is a 4D thing that's on rails. I think it replaced the old Back to the Future ride. So basically you get into a cockpit that's attached to the armature, but then the armature is on a track. The base of the armature is on a track, and you get basically moved around this big life-size diorama and blasted in front of screens occasionally, where you feel like you're riding a broomstick the whole time. It was pretty cool. Apparently it makes a lot of people motion sick. Nobody in our party was affected though.
That's good. And the wand.
So you buy this expensive ass wand. It's an $80 wand.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty nice.
Oh, I see. I see how it is. You can't build a lightsaber, but you will buy a wand.
Look, I didn't make these choices necessarily. there's spaces around. So the thing about the Harry Potter land in Universal is that they've themed up a whole like village outside of the castle, right? So you see the castle off in the distance, but there's a village where there's like food and drinks and you can buy robes and all of the merch is available. But in the windows of the shops, they have places that you can like there's little plaques on the ground and you can stand on them and cast magic spells with the magical $80 wand, and then animatronic shit happens inside the windows of the shops. Gonna go ahead and tell you, pretty cool. The animatronic stuff that happens inside the windows of the shops, pretty good. Like they have quills that are writing themselves, that are taking notes themselves with nobody working on them. You can make them stop and go and stuff like that. It's goofy. It was really, really fiddly. basically you have to tell the children to point the wand at the camera in order to make the wand work.
I see.
But then once they get the knack, you see children just walking up to the window and doing the thing. And the adults are like, how the fuck did they do that? This is no, none of this ever works when we try it. So
do the wands have any kind of buttons or any other controls on them? Or is it just a pointing line of sight?
The wands have a reflector in the tip that that is detected, or some sort of a thing that is picked up by a camera in the window. And it worked in full daylight. So, I mean, good on them. I think that's pretty much it.
And you keep the wand?
The wand is yours. God, I hope so.
$80.
$80 a day is kind of expensive. Universal also has a thing that works like Genie Plus where you can skip the line. Both of them you can only do once per day. Like, you can only skip the line once per day. The Universal one is really expensive because they price it based on demand. So it was like one day we were there, it was like $30, and one day it was like $70 each. It works much better at Universal because the Genie Plus at Disney is $20 per person. So everybody who hits the park buys it. Cause it's like the whole park is a sunk cost fallacy, right?
Of course. I'm already in for this much. What's another?
Right.
$20, $30, $50, $100.
Well, but it's like, hey, we can pay $60 and not wait 2 hours in line for the Rise of the Resistance. I'm absolutely going to do that.
Yeah.
Because the other option is to buy another day's park ticket, which is way more expensive. So basically just go and expect, if you're going to go to this shit, expect to be hung upside down by your ankles until they shake all of the money out of you.
Of course. And this all sounds cool, but this all sounds like what I would expect from a modern theme park experience. Like, I haven't really heard anything that was like truly mind blowing from an R&D technology standpoint. Like, you know, the use of mobile phone to lubricate the process sounds about like what I would expect. Like the evolution of the rides with the Star Wars stuff in particular, like, you know, they've added some stuff. Nothing sounds wildly futuristic to me, though, from what you're describing.
I intentionally kind of under described the Rise ride. Like, there were moments in there where I was like, holy shit, how have they done this?
Okay. That's cool.
Like there's a moment where you walk out of a shuttle and you're captured by the First Order, and you walk out and you're in this huge hangar, and there's a bazillion stormtroopers there just standing at attention. But they're also kind of like idly moving around because they're kind of shit stormtroopers. They're not just standing perfectly still. So there's like 80 animatronic stormtroopers standing there.
Jeez, that's a lot.
Yeah, like, or maybe it's 80 cast members that just stand there all day. I don't know. there's a lot of that stuff. So the thing that I will say is that there's a lot of stuff in the how they manage the actual rides, like the queuing stuff and how they manage people getting on and off of roller coasters and stuff like that is much better and less stressful than I was expecting.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, if there's one area you really want to see improvement, it's in the just getting you on and off stuff.
Yeah.
Efficiently.
Well, but also they always have somebody there that asks how many people are in your party, and they make sure that like you don't get split up with your kids and stuff like that, which is what always happens at Six Flags and Great America and stuff like that. So there's a real focus on making sure that people have a good time in a way that it doesn't feel like it's run by carnies, I guess is what I'm saying.
Well, that's a plus.
Yeah. I mean, it's nice. Yeah, I don't know that I'm sure I'll go back at some point. I have not. I was a little worried when I got there that I was going to turn into a Disney person after brief exposure to the park. So I think I'm cool. It was fun. It turns out I like having money also. So we won't be going back all that often. If I lived in Anaheim, I would buy season passes. I think it would be cool to just zip out to the park and hang out for a little bit and then zip back home. Anyway, so that's Disneyland.
Well, hey, glad you had fun.
As always, it is fascinating to look and see how those kind of complicated systems work, because I would love to be able to go and like see what it's like, what the operations center for Disneyland is like for the day.
Right. Imagine that control room.
It's got to be really cool.
I mean, there's got to be like multiple dedicated rooms for different stuff, right? Like park security and like kind of animatronic and motion stuff. And like, I'm sure those functions are pretty separated out, right? Because there's so much.
I bet like the animatronic and motion stuff is per ride.
Yeah.
Like, sure. I bet there's like control rooms per ride. But I bet my guess is that there's like some sort of overall park or area control center where they're like, okay, the line on Rise of the Resistance is getting long. Let's open up something else on blah blah blah, so we can suck people out of that area and into this area. And yeah,
the Disneyland Nerve Center.
That's what I'd like to see. Yeah. Brad, we've reached the point of the show where we thank our patrons.
We have. Thank you, patrons.
Thank you, patrons. As always, if you would like to find out how you can support Brad and Will Made a Tech Pod, you can go to patreon.com/techpod. Again, that's patreon.com/techpod. And for as little as $2 a month, you can become one of our fabulous patrons and gain access to the wonderful TechPod Discord, where you will find a bunch of beautiful nerds who talk about, stuff like Disneyland and Linux ACL. Ackles.
I haven't decided yet. Look, I mean, Jeremy said Ackles. I'm guessing he would know.
He did not have a beard. He didn't have much of a beard, but it was gray. So
that's true. That's true.
You can learn about Linux stuff. You can learn about cameras. You can learn about building stuff. There's a bunch of different interesting things happening every moment of every day in the TechPod Discord.
PC hardware. There's a lot going on with PC hardware lately. You might have heard.
I mean, look, if you're building a computer right now, it's real confusing. It turns out.
Yeah.
What should you get? Everybody looks like they have good stuff this time. I don't know. Again, you can go to patreon.com/techpod. And we've reached the point of the show where we like to thank our executive producer tier patrons, including Paddle Creek Games, makers of Fractured Veil, Andrew Slosky, Bunny Mimes, Octothorpe Bunny Mimes, Reluctant Meme Participant Wedge, Joel Krauska, Twinkle Twinkie, and James Kamek. Thank you all so much. We appreciate you.
Thank you.
I think next week, I don't know if we can say what we're talking about next week, because there's an embargo.
Sort of top secret hardware, kind of.
I mean, everybody probably can guess. So we're going to talk, we're going to have a hardware episode next week where we talk about some video card stuff. The next week after that, I think we have Gordon scheduled to return and give us the scoop on CPUs.
That's exciting. It's been too long since a Gordon episode.
He was going to come this week, but he's at TwitchCon, so we got to make fun of him for that. and then after that, I guess it's back to more questions. I don't know where we are, but in the schedule. But thanks everybody for listening, and we will see you all next week.